to episode 92 of A Gamer Looks at 40. I'm Bill Tucker, and welcome to Side Quests Volume 7. It's been a long time since I've done one of these, and if you're new to the show, this is an episode where I take all of the stuff from the cutting room floor of my many interviews that I do for the main episodes and compile them into a big old omnibus full of just stories and stuff. It's a really fun mixed bag where you get to learn a little bit more about the guests that I have for the focused episodes, the game-centric episodes, etc., and just kind of learn a bit more about the cool people I've had the great good fortune to meet along the way of this podcasting journey. Now, if you've been a fan of this show for maybe a year or so, you may have noticed over the last 6 months there have been some new voices involved in the episodes, and that was on purpose. I wanted to start bringing in some new perspectives, some new thoughts, and new people. And when I do that, I get the great fortune to, I get a great opportunity to also hear new introductions, new stories of how they got into games, new stories of the titles and the systems that connected with them personally. And when I do interviews, I usually start with that, especially if it's a new person, because I don't want to just jump into, hey, what do you think about Earthbound? I kind of want to build that rapport. So this is part one of a two-part side quest episode. So this will be volume 7. Next week will be volume 8, where I'm going to share the series of intros and hellos and fun random stories from a lot of the guests that you have heard over the last 4 to 6 months of A Gamer Looks at 40. Starting us off is a conversation with Matt of the Backlog Busters podcast. They're an incredible show where they encourage you, the game hoarder, not you, me, the game hoarder who has a Steam library of 100 games I've never played and ROMs that I've downloaded, sure, legally, sort of, kind of, maybe, that I'll never touch. They encourage you to dig into that backlog before buying the new and shiny, and they do so through a variety of different fun games. They have the Backlog Bingo, and they were introduced to me by Michael K. Hughes, formerly of Games My Mom Found, and now of the Capes and Junk podcast, and they do a great show, so definitely check them out if you enjoy video game podcasts, which if you're listening to this show, I'm assuming you do. So let's chat with Matt about his introduction to games, those first loves, and a Super Nintendo peripheral I've heard of in theory, but had never met an actual owner of. Matt, thank you so much for joining me today. It's really good to have you on. I appreciate it. So, man, first, before we get started with the main topic of discussion, I'd love to hear a bit about your start with games, kind of what your first touch point with games was, and any kind of, just kind of your first touch point. We'll just go from there, man.
Oh, first touch point of games. First off, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, man. No worries.
As for that, keep in mind, I have a brother and sister that are 8 and 9 years older than me. So a lot of things I got exposed to just through them. Mm-hmm. And I still remember being at probably 4 or 5 years old, maybe even younger. It's such a blur. The two introductions to video games I ever had was, it's a cross between just arcade games and then the good old Atari 2600.
Nice.
And one of the first things I remember seeing that I can recall is, I always explain it this way because I remember my house growing up, they had this green carpet when I was little and they changed it. I don't remember, like many, many years ago. But when they still had that with the old brown television set that you had to put on channel 3 on the knob, didn't even have the remote.
Yeah.
They were sitting there playing Kaboom on the Atari. And if anyone doesn't know, that's the old game where you had to use the paddles and you're using like the water underneath, moving the paddles back and forth, catching the bombs that the thieves dropping off the top of the screen.
Yep.
So I remember them playing that, but one of the first ones I actually remember is probably at the arcade playing Bump and Jump and Moon Patrol. I don't know why. I always played those games.
Bump and Jump and Moon Patrol. I don't know Bump and Jump. I don't know Bump and Jump.
I remember Bump and Jump, which I've seen them every once in a blue moon, but it's a typical vertical, I'm going to say vertical racer. You're at the bottom of the screen, you're a red car, and you're trying to get around the other cars, and you can kind of bump into them to try to push them off the screen. They're bumping into you. If you get pushed to the left or right edge, of course, you're going to, car explodes.
In a wreck.
You die. Yep. But there's a jump button that causes your car to jump really high, and you can kind of land on the cars as well. Now, if I'm not 100% correct on this, trust me, I haven't played this game in like almost 40 years, so it's a little
totally
hazy.
Fine.
So.
This show is all about hazy memories. It's totally fine. It's yeah.
But yeah, there was that, and then one of my favorite things. I mean, of course, that's where I found my love for Dig Dug and Galaga back then.
Of course, yeah.
Totally. Obviously, I was older, so jump how many years on that one, but still, one of my favorite things to play when I could find it. I don't see it anymore. I don't know if you remember when they used to have that Demolition Derby arcade game.
Demolition Derby arcade. I don't think I know that one.
It was just called Demolition Derby. The one they had at the Aladdin's Castle, back in Little Ohio.
Nice.
Because my brother and sister would play, and I would play with them. Of course, I didn't realize at first, you know, that I was. Sorry, noise upstairs.
You're fine.
I didn't realize I was. "Quote unquote," playing it. You know, they said I was playing, but I wasn't.
Oh, yep. They'll hold the controller, or
yeah. Well, at the arcade, it was a four-player one, so it was a top-down view. There was four steering wheels, two on one side, two on the other. I just remember there was my brother and sister would always be, probably red and blue, and then I was standing at the green car. But basically, it was just a top-down four. Pull the stick up to go forward, down to go reverse. There was no pedal and a steering wheel. And just like a Demolition Derby, you're trying to back into cars, destroy them, take damage, blah, 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 blah. It was just a top-down view. There was a bunch of computer cars. So,
I'm looking at a picture of it, and it looks like it's it's like one of those tabletop games.
Yes.
Like you could put a drink on.
Well,
yeah,
it didn't have that. It was just big enough so you can have four people. Because a lot of the places,
right.
I remember eventually the bowling alley. Yeah. Remember when bowling alleys had games?
Yeah. Totally. That was where you went, man.
They would have the two-player version. It was just a standing vertical.
Oh, yeah. I'm looking at both of them. Yeah. The one of them is the two-player cabinet, and the other has like a, again, top down that you look down. That's a cool game. That's a perfect game, though, for a kid. Hey, I hear you could be this car, and you can jam on that stick. Yeah.
You're the red car, even though I'm standing at blue. I didn't put two and two together.
Of course not. Of course not. That's awesome.
Or whatever.
Hey, man, listen, if you have kids, you've done it, right? You've handed the kid, a three-year-old, here's a controller. Now you're playing Mario Kart. You're not playing Mario Kart. Oh, yeah, you won. Yeah, I totally, totally dig that for sure. Was there a particular game? It sounds like you said you had siblings that were older, correct?
Yes, I did have siblings that were older.
So older siblings. Was there a game that took you from a kid who just liked games to somebody who fell in love with? Was there a first love game where you said, okay, this is something I love as opposed to just a hobby, a thing I do on weekends?
Yeah, I mean, all the arcade stuff was, I enjoyed it, I liked it, and I would honestly say it might have been once we finally got a Commodore 64.
Wow, okay.
A lot of the games we had on there, I didn't realize at the time, I'm going to say allegedly, they were copies of discs.
Okay, allegedly.
Allegedly.
Sure.
But there was just playing different games on that. That's when I had to actually put in odd commands is when I started to change. But of course, it fully got cemented once we finally got an NES. Because, I mean, this is kind of typical nowadays. But, you know, that was probably 80. Probably we didn't get an NES what, 1989, 90.
So. Oh, wow. So real late in the life cycle. Okay.
Yeah. I wasn't introduced to it till like 89. My sister's boyfriend from high school brought his NES over, so
gotcha.
And
very
then,
cool.
Yeah.
So the NES was the system that made you, I won't say super fan, but I feel like there's always touch points in someone's fandom where it goes to the next level. Was there a game on the NES that you were just in love with during that era?
I remember more from the SNES because that's when the games got a little more deep. But
yeah, you can go SNES if you like. Yeah, I mean,
on the NES, like just at that age, I was playing a lot of sports games. Baseball Stars was fantastic because that game was amazing. You can create teams, name your players, play games, get more salary, fire players, hire better players, level them up.
That's cool.
I don't know if you remember that from SNK, which I just learned recently. If you get the SNK collection on the Xbox version, actually it's the only one that has Baseball Stars on it.
That's rad. I didn't realize you could level up and do all that stuff on it. That's really cool.
Yeah, they'd have a certain amount of hit point, or not hit points, but number of points you could buy, pay for them. And, you know, they'd have a cap, maybe only 20 points, but, you know, you could still level them up, you know.
Yeah, that's neat. That's super cool, man. You mentioned also SNES was a big one for you. Because, again, the games were getting a little more detailed. You were probably getting older, so you were appreciating them more probably. Was there a favorite of yours on the SNES?
Oh, the GOAT's Chrono Trigger. Let's be honest.
Oh yeah, Chrono Trigger. It's a hard one to argue. I mean, it's a hard one to argue.
You had Final Fantasy 3/6. I still call it 3.
Fair.
But you know, the NES is when I started playing the RPGs. That's when I really now to go back to what you asked, the RPGs. The tip, yeah. Dragon Quest and the original Final Fantasy. I'm sorry, Dragon mm-hmm. Warrior. Got the free copy from Nintendo Power, if anybody remembers that.
Oh, yeah.
When Square didn't think it would do well. That's actually what cemented it more into games, because that was the first time I dealt with a big storyline. Chrono Trigger, Final Fantasy III. Had the multi-tap, played with buddies a lot of NBA Jam and NBA Jam TE.
You had a multi-tap.
Yeah, I still have it. That's sitting awesome, over on the outside of the room. So you get That's four fantastic. People together.
Yeah. I don't know anybody who had a multi-tap. That's cool. That's super cool.
Yeah. Oh,
I didn't know anybody.
I beat Secret of Mana with three humans, two other people playing the other characters. So
that's
the
first time I beat awesome.
that was fantastic. Until somebody had amazing. To cast a spell, but
well, yeah. But yeah. But that's amazing. I did not know. I don't know anybody who had a multi-tap, and certainly not anybody who beat Secret of Mana with actual three other people. That's cool. What a fun way to experience those games.
I beat that by myself, and it's not the same.
I've done the same.
Awful.
It's not great. It's really not great. But that's really cool. I'd love to hear some memories and recollections of you and your friends playing four player in that era. NBA Jam, Secret of Mana. Was it your house?
A lot of it would be my house, but I would take them. The Secret of Mana was at my house. NBA Jam, somebody else would have it. So right. Then we would, I'd take my multi-tap over with me. And the same thing happened even on the NES, because I actually had the four score. So believe it or not, one of the best games to play on the NES is Monopoly. It's still probably the best video version of that ever. Straight to the point. And if you had the multi-tap, you didn't have to pass two controllers between four
That's
people.
Great. That's great. I love Monopoly. I am a Monopoly purist. I say play the rules of the game.
None you have to have money rules. Free parking. Come on.
Nope. That's why these games take forever. That's why they take 4 hours.
Oh, man. I'm down to purist. $20. I got to have myself more. Oh, wait. I hit free parking. There's $4,000 in there.
Yes. That's awesome. I love that, man. So, yeah, man, I would love to. Yeah, I've always been a fly on the wall in that, again, in that group of friends playing four player, NBA Jam. Wow.
NBA Jam four player was just so much fun. Oh, I can't get over, because even when you have when you just get two people, I mean, a lot of that would happen. We'd have tournaments, you know, you'd have somebody would have a birthday party. So basically the standard thing is either you own the game or, you know, before you had to worry about if you liked the game, you know, you used to go to the video store and rent them. And then probably 99% of the games I owned, I rented it first before we ever.
Right.
I'm going to say bought it, but let's be honest, got it as a gift for either Christmas or my birthday.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. That's how it worked back then. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Chrono Trigger was what? $75 back then.
Yeah, something like that, right? Like way up there. Yeah, people complain about game prices now. It's like, 30 years ago wasn't much different. You know, those big games were
they were big.
They were big. Next up is the artist known as Mustin. Now, Mustin, he was on for a lot of the Earthbound series. He had some really great stories, not only about the series itself, but about the music of Earthbound. And you're going to hear some of that in this episode, because a lot of that didn't quite make it into the Earthbound stuff. Again, that's why I hold on to these things. Mustin is an incredible music producer. He's done some amazing work over the years. His most recent album is the Mario Mixtape, so be sure to just go to Mustin on Twitter. Right there in the bio, there's a link to it. Check it out. It's pretty fantastic. Mustin came to the show through my, I don't want to say ill-fated, because it was well-fated, but maybe ill-advised casting call for the rental episode for the Mario Paint and for the Earthbound episode that, of course, turned into the 5-episode series that, again, I'm amazed it blew up that far. And he was one of the people that responded. I say not ill-fated or ill-advised because I had so many responses. It took a week to go through. It caused a delay in show production. And again, that's not a flex. That was just a really great testament to how many people had connections to those three topics. Mustin was one of those people. As soon as I heard a bit about his story, I was like, yep, you're coming on. And we had a great conversation. So here's some more information about Mustin, the work he's done in music, and some of his favorite games from over the years. So let me just start first with just kind of the basic get to know you as far as games go. What was your first entry point into video games? And do you have a game or a system that turns you from a fan into something more, that connected to you in a way that was special, as opposed to just, oh, I play this for fun? What were some of those moments for you? And again, where did you start your journey with games?
I don't really remember the first game or games. I remember playing Mega Man's. I remember playing, we were pretty poor, so I had a black and white TV for most of the time. And mm-hmm. I remember playing Felix the Cat and feel like it was just actually the cartoon. I remember playing Dr. Mario on a black and white TV, and that was not fun. But I have the most affinity for the Super Nintendo, for sure. Still the best controller. Just an amazing catalog of games, and still some of the absolute strongest soundtracks ever composed.
Absolutely. Yep.
And I just, that's my nostalgia system that I go to. I mean, I grew up with a Nintendo, but just the Super Nintendo locked it in for me. That's my go-to.
What was your favorite soundtrack on the SNES? If you had to pick one out of the incredible amount that's on there, because it is, agreed, it's an amazing sound system.
That question is so loaded, man.
I know. There's a lot.
Soundtracks, you know, favorites will change all the time. I've got Google Keep notes that says my favorite movie, and it's a list of 6 movies. My favorite TV show,
right.
It's a list of 6 TV shows. So on Super Nintendo, it'll go back and forth between SimCity, which is Soyo Oka's, like, I mean, we're talking about the woman that wrote Rainbow Road, but SimCity is so incredible. And just from a composition standpoint, so interesting, and a great study in using a motif and a theme. It's absolutely incredible score. She did amazing on that. And then she did Super Mario Kart, which is also absolutely incredible. Then I have both Final Fantasy games, the 4 and 6. I mean, there's just too much. I mean, Chrono Trigger, I listen to it. I listen to Final Fantasy 4, 6 and Chrono Trigger during my daytime job, just in a rotation throughout the week. Pretty often. Yeah. Like, it's just, those are just go-tos. There's just so many.
What would you say would be the most influential? Which soundtrack do you think influenced your style the most?
Oh, I don't, my style, I definitely like the darkness in Super Metroid. I think that doing arrangements of Super Metroid music has opened up parts of my brain that really gel and mesh with those styles of music, the ambient and rhythm driven. Chrono Trigger he's a big influence. Some of those tracks, I like some of the, there's tracks that people don't do all the time. They're not like slept on or anything, but like Silent Light from Chrono Trigger is such a great piece that I don't see arrangements of all the time. And like Serpent Trench from Final Fantasy VI is kind of the same way. I love that one.
Yeah.
So I don't know. There's Super Nintendo had such a huge influence on me and my sound.
For sure.
Yeah. The Zelda one, man, we could solve that one easy if they would just recognize that Link's Awakening is the best Zelda game and there'll never be anything better.
I love Link's Awakening. It's probably a top three for me. I just did my Legend of Zelda series and I spent 6 months in that world. And I can't dive back in for a while. Like Tears of the Kingdom is not, it's going to be at least a year before I touch that game. I can't go back into it. Because if I do go back into Zelda, I got to play Minish Cap and I want to play Four Swords and I'm playing the Oracle games now that they're on the Nintendo Online. Like, all these things I still need to fill in because I'm a big Majora's Mask fan. And Link's Awakening is so great. God, that game is just.
Yeah, I got to go do that. Minish Cap.
Unbelievable.
Minish Cap was GBA?
Same.
Yeah, I gotta do that. Yep. All my favorite Zeldas are handheld, and I know that the Switch is handheld. But my son ruined Breath of the Wild for me. The way that he played it apparently was like different. Okay. But all I thought it was is going around to these shrines. And that's all I would ever see him.
A lot of shrines. It's a lot of shrines.
I mean, just hours after hours after hours until, and that was whenever it was on the Wii U and he was young. Then he just bought it again a few months ago to get ready for the Tears of the Kingdom. And I'm like, oh God, here we go again. Because my office desk is here. And my TV's right next to it. I'm like, why are you just doing this? And I don't know if you've ever seen the, what is it called? Terminal Montage. It's this, it's a animation, this cool animation, like group or whatever.
Okay. Yeah.
The way that they did it's, and they have this series, it's called, they said something about, and then whatever it is. So something about Breath of the Wild is perfect. Cause it's exactly how my son played the game. Just crashing into all he did was that. Was the temple, what did I call them?
The shrines, you mean, or the temple? The shrines, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
no, you're fine. And it's great because that's whenever I saw that, I was like, this is the same thing. But then one day when he was playing it in the past few months, I heard this music I'd never heard before, or at least from the game, because I'd listened to some of the music on my own by myself, but, and he was in a town. And I was like, there's towns in this game? Because I had no idea.
Oh, that's great.
Like, I mean, we're talking like years, man. Years. I had no idea. Because that's exactly how that's he really did good. It. And oh my gosh. But thankfully, he bought a huge TV and he put it in his room for Tears of the Kingdom. So
lovely.
I don't have to worry about that one.
So yeah, you were talking about your son being involved with the project and watching him get into it and kind of grow from it.
Yeah, it was amazing. I saw the spark of creativity in him that he wanted to do this. He had the idea, and I just kind of helped guide him. And before he knew it, he was an executive producer on a project. Instead of his dad telling him what to do, he was telling his dad what to do. And it was a real trip, but it was a lot of fun, and it was great to be able to get feedback from Generations Z and Alpha to kind of get away from. I know that there's my friends that are going to get everything that I do no matter what, but it would be nice to connect more with some of the newer audience. And have them be fans too.
Yeah, and let it kind of transcend the generations, right? Kind of let these that these things kind of move throughout, generations and experiences. I think that's really cool. I'm glad that you got the chance to do that with your son. That's a really special opportunity there. That's cool.
Yeah.
Next up, we chat with Ryan, aka Retro64 on Twitter. You will remember him from the part five of the Earthbound series, the one where I talk about the community and the people that support that amazing game and continue to support it. He was a last minute addition when I was going through the Earthbound series and it kept expanding and expanding. There were a few interview segments where they mentioned the community. And as I was researching, I realized this community is ridiculous. It's awesome. And I knew very quickly I had to do something about the community. And I had a rush of people to interview. I had maybe 3 weeks to do. I wanted at least three. And that's what I ended up getting was three interviews. And I wanted them to be, you know, pretty beefy. And I kind of got in a rush. Like, it almost didn't happen. And Ryan was one of those people, very gracious. We had a quick turnaround on the interview process. We had a really fun conversation, and I hope that all translates. And here's some other topics and thoughts that Ryan has about the community and just about kind of his, and like everybody else, his growth with games and how it affects him as a person and a creator today. I would love to hear a bit more about your content creation. Again, as we've kind of already skimmed through, you've done a lot of work with Mother Squared, which is the modern-ish reimagining of Mother. I know you have a demo coming out soon, I believe.
Mother Encore is the one that has the demo. We do not have any plans for a demo at this moment.
Okay, fair enough. That's fine. That is fine. So Mother Encore.
You have to say that because else people in the Discord start going, when's the demo?
We'll be very... Whenever I talk to people who make things, I never ask them about deadlines. Because the answer is always going to be when it's ready. And it's like, again, you never want to put like a time stamp on something. Then it's there forever. Yeah. So Mother Encore is a reimagining of the original game?
Mother Encore is a reimagining of Mother 1 in the with aspects taken from Mother 3. Mm-hmm. While Mother 2 is much more of a faithful remake, trying to replicate the original feel of the game with higher fidelity sprites, mm-hmm. animations, and some extra features and quality of life like the ability to run, how better inventory management, how having key items take up your regular item slots. I don't know why they thought that was a good idea.
I know.
And that sort of stuff.
I think it's really neat. I've been looking through some of the videos on your Twitter on the Mother Squared especially. And is it Mother 2 or Mother Squared?
It's Mother Squared.
It is Mother Squared. Okay. And I've been watching those videos and I think it's beautiful. I think you're doing an amazing job with that. I love the fact that you're modernizing the visuals and not just the quality of life stuff is thank you. Because, you know, some of the stuff in Mother 2 and Earthbound, it's not the sometimes friendliest game to play, you know, inventory management, we all complain about it. But you're shaving off those rough edges and the visual style you're going for keeps the imagination of the original while just giving it like this little fresh coat of paint. I think it's really beautiful.
I really appreciate that because I was not brought on as the lead artist, but it just kind of ended up that way. And I have been working extra hard to make sure the game feels and looks how it should, if that in a way.
Yeah, yeah.
I was just gonna say,
for me, it feels like a restoration of a painting. You're not repainting it. You're almost modernizing it. But what I love about this is, and this is truly, I wouldn't say if it weren't true, it, every, all the visuals I've seen from this original, this trailer, Your Mother Direct trailer, everything I've seen, it feels like the original developer would have made it. It just feels updated.
Again, I appreciate you.
It's so cool.
Me and the other artists, we go to insane lengths to make sure everything. I'm a person that cares very much with the author intent and intent of the creator in terms of what their vision is. And went through some very silly circumstances to go and find things, of going to tracking down original rare concept art, going and finding rare guidebooks that have early promotional art made for the guidebook that is based off of prototype and or concept art that we know because it is based off of concept art and or prototype images that have shown in magazines later.
I love it. I love it. There's such a care. There's a care too. And again, this is a quick little like minute clip or whatever. Oops, I just played it. There's like a minute and a half clip. And again, I can just totally see where you all are going with it. Anybody listening, please check out Mother Squared and check out the clip. And I'll reference it, of course, in the show notes. So if you want to check that out on your own, please feel free. It's awesome. Like, it's really cool. I looked at it like, oh, you can tell they care. It's just as simple as that. So congratulations on that. It's really neat.
I know this probably wasn't what you were thinking of when you said like mother content creation. But I also have been, for the last few years, helping out just Mother Forever staff with the directs themselves. I have been working to... I've made the animated trailers for the... Like, not animated trailers, the animated intros with the for the last two with... Yeah, the editing help by Ash. Thank you. And I... Especially the last one... with which was themed more around Mother 3 was extra special because I got to animate to custom lines made from us by Lonnie Manella. I'm sorry if I pronounced her name wrong. The official voice actor of Lucas from the Smash Bros. Games.
Oh, wow.
And was insane.
What a thrill.
I hope I did a good job. Every single year, the Mother Direct animations get super duper crunched because of real life obligations.
Sure, and life, yep.
Unfortunate Blender mishaps.
Yep. The tools are only as good as our tools, yeah.
I always feel... Each year, I hope to make the animated intros better and better. So I hope... I am slightly more satisfied with this year's one than last year's. That was something.
Love it.
But that was really exciting. And one of the other coolest parts, which goes back to communities, Right before the Mother Direct aired, I went to Too Many Games with a friend, another friend that I met from the Mother community, who is part of that same group, and we met up in real life, and we spent the day at Too Many Games together, where we then met up with Cody, the webmaster of Mother Forever, and just talked about Mother. And it was really cool just having an in-person meetup.
That's really neat. I love that. That's really special when you can when the connections go outside of the Discord, outside of the internet, getting to meet real people. I'm going over to the Portland Retro Gaming Expo in a couple weekends. And I'm not a collector of things. I sometimes go to these conventions. I don't know why I'm there. I'm like, I don't buy stuff. I don't collect stuff. I love the community. I like meeting people, just talking about games and being immersed in that, especially in the world of retro games. for more than just nostalgia, because the people are real, you know, and having those connections is fun. And I think that's a really cool piece of it.
The extra cool thing that wasn't even planning to do that just kind of happened is when we were talking with Cody, the creator of the Mother to Earth documentary was there. And he just joined in.
I love it. That's so great.
And that was extra cool because he got to talk about his experience when he met with Suzuki, one of the composers of Earthbound, for the making of that documentary. And that was just surreal.
Just wanted to take a quick moment to thank my wonderful patrons for their patronage. It is greatly appreciated, and I truly love each and every single one of you, including Terry Kinnair, Greg Seward of the Player One podcast and Generation 16 series of videos, Games with Coffee, the Let's Play Princess, Theodore LaBarbera, BT Goebbels, Tim Knowles of The Leadist, Nerds Without Pants' very own Julian, Seth Sergil of the All M podcast, and the one and only Pete Harney. Many thanks to you and to everybody who has supported the show financially over the last 2+ years. Your support and your trust in me means more to me than I can probably accurately express. Let's jump back into the episode. Next up on this edition of SideQuest is Rigney of the Reliving Retro podcast. Now, I don't remember where I met Rigney. I feel like I've known him for a while. I feel like I've known him for the length of this show, but he's a relatively new friend of the show. I think maybe it might be 2023. I honestly don't remember, but I've been very lucky to have guested on his show multiple times. I am his closer, as he likes to say. Whenever they do their final episode of the season, they bring me in to chat about games, usually bad, once in a while good. But it's always a joy to be on that show with Rigney and Nasser and just talking games. They're a good crew and a lot of fun. A lot of this has been pieced together over the last year or so, because he's been on a number of different podcasts of mine. He was most prominently featured on the Earthbound episode, and like a lot of these people. So let's listen in to some of Rigney's introduction to games, some of his earliest memories, and more of his personal stories. Before we get started, I'd like to just get a few kind of get-to-know-you questions regarding video games. I guess the first question really is, that's the one I guess everyone asks, is what was your first touch point with gaming? Where was your first, what was your first touch point?
So, my family has been big into gaming for as long as I can remember. I know I started playing the NES. I remember playing original Mario Bros. And like Castlevania at my aunt's house on her NES. And then I know, obviously, my family had one as well. I remember playing Super Mario Bros. 3 and stuff like that. But yeah, my parents were actually really big gamers, so they had all that stuff even before I was born. Because I was born in 89, they already had an NES, and they had like an Intellivision and all that stuff, like, again, way before I was born. So it's really cool to have like parents that are, you know, gamers as well, because it kind of just, you know, reinforces it. It doesn't feel like it's something that they hate that I do. I can remember specifically, if I could tell a quick story, that
Go for it.
One Christmas, I remember I think something had fallen on the floor and went underneath the couch or whatever. So I went, it was like a Hot Wheels car or something like that, and it rolled under the couch. And so I remember like reaching under to try to grab it, and my hand hit a box, and I pulled the box out, and it's a complete in box Super Nintendo. Yeah, and I was like floored. I was like, wow, this is amazing. And right on top of the box was Street Fighter 2. And come to find out that my parents had been playing it up until Christmas so that they could wrap it after. You know what I mean? Like, so they had been pulling it out every single night, playing it, putting it back in the box, and then putting it under the couch.
Oh my God, I love that. So basically your parents are playing your Christmas gift.
Yeah.
Just getting the time, knowing that when they gave it to you, that'd be it. That you, they would never be able to touch it because you'd be attached.
100%.
That's so good. Now, did you confront them about it, or did you just let them have their fun?
No, so I don't remember ever saying anything to them as like a kid in that moment, but I do remember like a couple years later kind of being like, what was up with that Super Nintendo underneath the couch? And she was like, oh yeah, we played that like every single night when you guys went to bed.
Oh, it's so good. They were testing it for you. They were making sure.
That's all they were doing.
They were making it without defect, just in case something was wrong, they could return it. Mm-hmm. Well, that's really good. I don't hear that very often. You know, like you said, parents who played games before you did are being introduced to it, because I think that's something we're going to do with our kids. Mm-hmm. You know, like I introduced my son to games, and you'll introduce your, if you haven't already, your kids to games. So how was that for you? And you mentioned it was cool because it was something that was not taboo. It was just an expected part of your growing up. Did you play a lot with them?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, a ton. We played, as far as I can remember, like the games that we played the most, Super Mario Kart, we played that a ton. Super Mario World, obviously. We played a lot of Turtles in Time. That was always a big one. My dad was like this, like, he thought he was like a really technical like whiz, I guess, back in the day. But he used to, he ran the house on splitters. Okay, so don't tell any of the cable companies. But yeah, we got a lot of cable in our house.
Yes. Oh yeah.
But he also ran splitters off of the Super Nintendo so that we could play it. He could play it out in the living room, and I could play it in my bedroom, because my bedroom was right next to the living room. So as long as the controllers could reach, we could play it in both rooms. And I remember specifically one night I kind of snuck the one-player controller into my room, turned the Super Nintendo on, and then waited till I thought he went to bed. And he must have seen it coming the whole time, because as soon as I started playing Turtles in Time, I noticed that the second player joined, and he started playing it with me at midnight.
That's cool. What a fun memory. I love that.
Yeah.
That's super,
it was pretty fun.
That's super cool. I remember the days of splitters. I remember I trying my hand at it when I was like early 20s or so, you know, still trying to figure out like apartment stuff. Splitters and then signal boosters, because the signal would degrade if you split the cable signal. Oh man, that's so funny. I love that story. What would you say a formative game for you was? What was this? Again, it sounds like you were brought up in this world of video games, so this might be a more challenging question. But for a lot of people, there was that one game. I know the Super Nintendo, I think, might have been your big system, but was there one game that you played that turned you from, I don't want to say a casual fan, for just someone who played games, to like, okay, this is something I want to do. This is, I love this thing. Like, I'm going to do this till I grow old, right? Like, was there that one game or moment that cemented this as like a passion for you?
I mean, maybe this is too early in my childhood to say this, because like I said, I was born in 89. This game came out in 91. But I mean, just looking back at it, really, this was the genesis of it all. And it's Super Mario World for me.
Yeah.
It seems like probably like a pretty basic answer, but I mean, it's honestly, it's like, it's platforming perfection. Platformers are kind of my bread and butter, and it definitely started with Super Mario Brothers 3, I would say, in terms of like, okay, I really like this. This is, you know, this is a lot of fun. But Super Mario World just kind of like cemented it. Like, okay, these are my types of games for sure. And, I've always gravitated towards like those Super Mario World games. But yeah, that's what I would say. Super Mario World, probably.
Yeah, that's a good one, man. It's not basic. It was with every system. Every kid had it. You know, I remember getting my Super Nintendo and playing Mario World on Christmas Day and thinking it's never going to get better than this. Like, this is it. Like, how can games ever exceed this? And it's near perfection. You're right. It takes everything that Mario 3 did and makes it that much better. And may I just say that you basically lived in like Pee Wee's Playhouse. You had multiple TVs for on your sleepovers. Like, are you kidding me?
Yeah. Well,
how cool is that?
Yeah. So a lot of times what we would do is we would all hang out in the living room my mom would usually hang out like in the computer room playing on her. This is older when we were like teenagers, right. But we would, you know, she would hang out in the computer room playing on her computer or whatever. We would hang out in the living room. So we have like the big screen. We'd have like the most recent console hooked up to that. So it was usually like the PS2 or the GameCube or whatever we were playing. And then I would bring the TV out of my room, put that in the living room somewhere and hook up like my Super Nintendo to it. And then we would have another TV like from my brother's room and we would hook up, you know, another console to that, whatever else was left over, the GameCube, the N64 or whatever, we would hook up to that one.
Again, so, so cool. I just love that. I love that concept, man. Again, Pee-wee's Playhouse. You have no idea how lucky you were to have parents who dug it and were able to provide that for you. That's so
cool. Yeah. I mean, well, I had a buddy.
You do know. Well, you do know. I shouldn't say you don't know. You,
yeah. Well, I had a buddy at school that was kind of like, I remember asking him like, cause I used to like burn CDs for people once I had like a computer. Cause I was one of like the first kids that I knew of that had like a computer with like two disc drives. Right. So you could burn CDs. And so I remember, asking my buddies, like, you know, if they wanted any CDs burned or whatever. And this one kid was like, wait, so you have a computer? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, oh, I was like, yeah, do you want any like CDs burned? And he's like, well, like what kind of music? And he had no idea of like his parents were like from a very religious background. So he didn't know of like any like the rock bands that I listened to, anything like that. And then we got talking about like TVs and like video games and stuff. He's like, oh, we don't have any TVs in the house. I'm like, you don't have any TVs in your house at all? He's like, no, zero TVs. I'm like, what do you do when you go home? Like, what do you do?
What do you do?
Yeah,
play Xbox, I guess? I mean,
yeah, do you like go outside? Are you one of those weird kids?
Yeah, you actually do outside things, like roam the streets. It's funny. Yeah, that's really interesting. It being that first gateway. What is burning a CD? I had friends. I mean, I think and this is gonna go off topic, but that's fine. I don't mind. Yeah. I had friends who introduced me to. I think we all had friends who introduced us to stuff that would be formative. Yeah. For example, I never really listened to any music other than country, because my parents listened to country music, and once in a while I listened to like Bruce Springsteen records or this album, and it was older music. But really, country music was the only thing I knew until I was like in seventh, eighth grade. And then I met a kid in my homeroom in ninth grade who was like, oh, have you ever heard of Guns N' Roses? Have you heard of Metallica? Have you heard of Green Day? And I was like, no, I never heard of this. So he made me a tape. I can still visualize this tape.
Yeah.
Because I played it constantly. And it had Stone, I was in high school in 94, 95. So it was like Nirvana and Stone Temple Pilots and Soundgarden, like all
Chili
Peppers
and stuff like that.
Chili. And then I realized there's this whole world of music that had been exposed to me, and everything I had been listening to up to that point immediately disappeared into the ether. Yeah, it was it was very, very, very formative. I love that you were able to do that. You probably put that kid. I don't know if you burned him anything. Like, hey, here's whatever you were listening to at the time.
I burned him a CD. However, I did not have, I knew he was like from a religious background, but I didn't really understand what he should and should not be listening to. So I just burned him like, it was like my top 15 favorite songs at the time. One of them was I Stand Alone by Godsmack. He saw that and he wouldn't accept the CD.
Wow. Really?
Yeah. He's like, I can't. He's like, if my parents see that, he's like, they're going to kill me. He's like, I can't take it. I can't take it. And I'm like, all right, I'll make you another one without this song. I'm sorry.
That's so funny and interesting. Yeah, no Godsmack. They got that. Yeah, I can definitely see a religious family not being okay with a band called smacking deities. I don't think that would be that would fly. Was there ever a moment when, obviously, when you're playing against your parents or they're better than you? Do you remember when you were able to beat your mom or dad at a game and have that mastery? Like, I just beat mom and dad at XYZ game.
For my mom, we never really played like super competitive. A lot of it was like she would show me how to do things. I can remember her trying to show me how to do like the speed boost at the beginning of like Mario Kart and like trying to teach me the timing of it and stuff like that. So we never really played anything like super competitive, me and my mom. However, my dad and I, the Madden video games all the time on like Super Nintendo and Nintendo 64, playing NFL Blitz. I think Blitz was the first time I really started beating him at things, but that was like, he would always claim that that's not a conventional sports game and that I would cheat.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, it's an arcade football game. So he'd be like, he'd be like, this isn't real football. Let's put in Madden. And I'm like, no, Madden sucks, dude. But he would always get mad at me in Madden because I would constantly go for it on fourth down. Like, I would never punt the ball or anything like that. So he would always mad about that. But that actually lasted a while that he would be better than me. Especially in Madden, he beat me all like through like the N64 era, the PS1 era. We got the Dreamcast and we were playing like the NFL 2K games. He would beat me in those. And then he would also beat me in like the Maddens that came out for like the PS2. But yeah, those, it took me a while to get better than him in Madden, at least. But a lot of the other games, like I could beat him in. It just so happened that Madden was his thing.
Madden was the thing. That was the white whale that you were not able to get past him. But after a while, you were able to beat him in other things. So that's really cool, man. I always hear stories about, again, like, you know, dad and son playing basketball. And then the one day the son usurps the dad because dad's getting older. Reaction time's not quite as good. And son is hitting his prime. And all of a sudden there's that moment. Oh, I can beat dad consistently at this thing. That's funny. But Madden was the one hard one.
Well, it's funny because I actually I picked up like an NES lot and I was playing it with, I was just testing the NES games with my daughter over the weekend, and we came across Base Wars, which is like, if you're not familiar, it's an NES game where you basically play baseball like in space and you're playing it with like all these robots and stuff like that. And she hit 11 home runs against me. I could not figure out how to hit a home run. And I'm like, this is way too early to be losing these games to her. She's only 8. I can't. It was rough.
Sorry, I'm chewing. Give me a second. Dude, that's so funny, man. I love that. I think that's really good. I love the idea that they start early, man. That do you let your kids win sometimes, or are you like, no, you got to earn this victory?
Very, very rarely I'll let my daughter win. My other kid, my son is he's only 5 months old, so right now I'm letting him win things, but once he becomes like, you know, 2, then I'll, you know, I'm not going to let him win anymore.
Interesting.
He's got to earn those.
He's got to earn them. Good for you. Good for you. I don't want to deal with the crying. I don't want to deal with the complaining sometimes. It's like, I just take the W already. Fine. Next up on this edition of SideQuests is Bram Stoker award-winning author Robert P. Atone. If you checked out any of the Earthbound episodes, he was all over those, sharing some really poignant memories and really deep thoughts about Earthbound and his personal connection to that game. Of all the people I interviewed, he was among the most open and vulnerable, which was really cool and very refreshing and exactly the sort of thing I love when interviewing people for this show. I have yet to read his stuff. He is in the horror genre. Robert, if you're listening to this, you're next on the list. I promise you, you're next. I have been reading Laird Barron like crazy. I have been snorting his short stories for the last month or so. I'm taking a break because, oh boy, that stuff is dense. And I am now going to move into some of Robert's work, namely The Vile Thing We Created. That is definitely next on the list. And he just released another book entitled Curse of the Cobb Man, which I don't know. It sounds amazing. The cover, I'm looking at it right now. It's an angry killer corn of cob. Cob corn. My wife can't eat corn. She has diverticulitis. It's literally the scariest food stuff in the pantry. I cannot wait to read his work. Again, I comes from very good authority. He has come to me very well recommended by people I trust, who enjoy a horror. That is my go-to fiction, is horror fiction. So this is right up my street, and I can't wait to dive into his work, like literally tomorrow. That is next on the list. I have to finish reading a book for work about, I don't know, strategies. I'll get the cliff notes, it's fine. And then boom, once I'm done with that, I'm on to Robert's work. So let's join him as he talks about his writing and his history with video games, which includes some really interesting twists and turns.
Nice. All right. Well, Robert, thanks so much for joining me today to chat about Earthbound. It's a game that sounds like has a lot of meaning to you. But before we get into that, I'd love to hear a bit about your history with games, kind of what your entry point was, and definitely about your book. I think that's super cool.
Awesome. Yeah, man. Thanks for having me. Yeah, my history of gaming, like I kind of feel like I was born with a controller in my hand. We had literally everything. We had Atari 2600 and computer games, Nintendo, literally everything. And, you know, I was predominantly an indoor kid, like most of us were, thanks to the power of Nintendo and Sega. But at the same time, you know, as I got older, I played sports and stuff, too. So, like, I had, like, kind of a best of both worlds, like, upbringing. But, yeah, no, gaming was always, like, a foundational thing for me, like a thing that I always enjoyed. And, you know, my friends would always come over, like we would do NHL 94 tournaments. We would do Mortal Kombat 2 tournaments. Yeah. You know, like,
yeah, cool.
It was awesome. And it's funny too. Like I loved Street Fighter 2 Championship Edition. Like that's my favorite version of Street Fighter 2 for the Sega Genesis. And as I got older, when I got into college, especially, I was invited by Capcom to be like part of their street team. And I used to get to play. Yeah, I used to get to play at like warehouse parties and stuff when like the alpha games were in the arcades and stuff like that. And I would annoy people to no end because I would beat them with Dan.
Is that one of the worst? I know very little about the hierarchy of Street Fighter. Is that one of the worst characters?
He's the worst character.
Funny.
Yeah, he's got like long brown hair. He wears a pink gi. He's kind of a joke character. But yeah, he was like, I started off with Ken, and then I was like, you know what, I want to learn Dan so I can embarrass all these guys who like to play as Ryu and Ken.
That's great.
Yeah.
I love that. How did you get involved with the street team? Like, how did that transpire?
Capcom was really, I mean, they still are really cool. I'm still in contact with them, but like, they had like an open play kind of thing when Alpha 3 came out. And I remember going to it. It was at like a local arcade. And then I just kind of met the reps and stuff. And I was, you know, I wasn't like world class good or anything, but I was good for like my region. And, you know, it just kind of kicked off from there. So I would get the invites. I would go. I would make a little money because there was some tournament stuff involved. I didn't make like $1 million or anything, but
sure.
You know, a couple grand here and there.
That's nice. And how old were you when you were doing that?
I was probably like 19, 20.
Wow, that's not bad coin. Go around to different areas, play Street Fighter games, kind of be an ambassador for the game for different people. That is really neat.
Oh, dude,
that's cool.
It was fun. It was a lot of fun. It was, you know, like, I wish I could do it now. It's funny, like, I play the games now, and I have, like, the beginnings of Carpal Tunnel in my right hand.
Oh, no.
Right on my thumb. And I'm like, oh, I'm just not as fast. I could feel my power fading.
If you went to an arcade right now, if there was like Alpha or something, one of the ones that the competitive Marvel versus Capcom, maybe,
yeah,
would you be able to show up and show out and just be like,
I could take all comers.
Think so? That's great.
Yeah, I feel pretty confident.
I love when I go to an arcade and I see people who are really good at Street Fighter and I realize how horribly bad I am at that game. I was never a fighting game person. I love watching the precision. It's so interesting to watch two really good players compete. It's a fun experience. Have you done any Twitch stuff or anything like that or tournaments?
I've done, I do a thing with a buddy of mine where we do like a let's play kind of thing and he plays and I sort of, you know, provide commentary and stuff, but I've never done anything myself. I should. I honestly, I still play games. I haven't, you know, I don't have the newer systems. I have an Xbox One. That's like my most recent system. But I've been getting way back into retro gaming. I just got a Retron 5. And easily the best video game purchase I've ever made. I'm playing like Game Boy Advance games that I didn't, you know, I didn't have a Game Boy Advance because that was like a little bit after my time, I guess, when I was younger. But like, I'm going into that and I'm like, man, some of these Advance games are like real deep, real smart. And you know, none of them can hold a candle to Earthbound, of course, but
right, yeah,
they are quite good.
Exactly. Absolutely. But kids are smarter than you think. Yeah, I have a 7-year-old and he is way smarter than I realize. I've told this story before on the show, but I took him to see Coco. It was like his first movie and he was like 3 or 4. And we sit down. It was one of those Eden theaters, the reclining seat, you know, and he's got the food and the trailers and all that. And within about 15 minutes of the movie starting, he's like, "Daddy, I have to leave. I can't stay here." I'm like, "Well, it's okay. Why don't we just stay? You know, let's watch it. It's okay. It's a little scary. Skeletons and big spirit monsters." And after about maybe 25 minutes, it was very clear he had to leave. Like, this was not okay. So I pay the check. We leave. I get in the car. I'm like, "Well, what was the problem with the movie? Was it the skeletons? Was it, again, the spirit animals?" And his answer was, "I didn't like the way the little boy's family didn't let him play music." And I'm like, "Oh, you're empathizing. I'm not ready for this. You're four. You can't have emotions like this." But that goes to show the kids are smarter. So thanks for sharing that, man. I think that having those, did you play a lot with your dad when you were a kid, or was it more of he like provided the stuff and kind of was on the outside looking in a little bit?
No, yeah, he played. He definitely, he liked Hogan's Alley on the NES a lot.
Nice.
Yeah. He played a little bit of Mortal Kombat. You know, mostly he did enjoy watching. He used to like watching me play Mutant League Hockey. He got a kick out of that, which actually, like, I played that the other day and I thought about him. But he mostly watched, we played a lot of like board games and stuff together. We used to play Magic the Gathering sometimes together. Just stuff like that. But mostly he enjoyed watching me enjoy the stuff. Even though, like I said, he would watch and whatnot and like enjoy a good story and whatnot.
Yeah, my dad was very similar. He just watched. He didn't really play much of anything, but he always was amazed by it. It was born in the NES era. He was always amazed by the technology of it. Like, "Wow, that looks really cool." Or, "Wow, that looks really interesting." And some days he would just be like, "We're watching something else. You can't play now." It's like, "Oh, okay, Dad, fine." But he just didn't want to deal with it. But it's, yeah, that's really interesting. And you said you grew up on Long Island. Whereabouts? I'm from Jersey originally, so.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I'm originally from East Islip, Long Island, which is like sort of the middle of the island on the south shore.
Yep. Oh, that's cool. Yeah, so you're definitely around beaches and such. So that's interesting that summer would speak to you that way. Next up on the show is Sam from the Retro Logic podcast, and he came on the show to talk a bit about Earthbound and, again, was a crucial part of that episode series. When you're asking for people to come onto an Earthbound show and get interviewed for that podcast and their Discord name is Third Strongest Mole, you know, you should be guaranteed that person has a tight connection and is going to be a great guest. And he was. Sam is one of those people who think really deeply about games. He's got a very interesting perspective. He likes weird stuff. He goes outside the margins when it comes to his fandoms and the games he plays. So check out Retrologic if you haven't done so already. And the whole family of Retrologic podcasts, Retro Groove, Film Logic, etc. Let's join Sam as he talks about his introduction to games and why they mean so much to him. Because you obviously have a really wide berth of knowledge about games, right? Much wider than mine, for sure. You mentioned Mega Man X. What would you say was the game, maybe it's Mega Man X, that really cemented video games as a whole, as a hobby you were really going to be into? As more than just a casual player, like, "Oh, this is something that I am now really into, kind of fall in love with it." Like, what's, I guess, the game that made you fall in love with games?
That's a tough one. Because, I mean, I've got the question before, like, "What's the first game you played?" And I'm like, I literally don't know.
I know. I've stopped asking that question because I don't know either.
I'm the youngest of three brothers, right? And so The Super Nintendo was purchased in my home when I was a baby. Like,
yeah,
at some point somebody stuck a controller in my hands and I had no idea what I was doing. They're like, "Look, he's playing the game." And I'm like, "Was I? I don't know. What game was it? Don't remember." It was really more of a gradual thing. Like, I grew up playing games. I was playing games with my brother. And I just never stopped. I guess a lot of people have that, you know, And I saw it in my older brothers. Like they kind of reached a point where they were less interested in, and both of them still play games to this day, just not
sure
as much as I do. And, you know, to be fair, a lot of that is because they're married and I'm not. They fair. Have other responsibilities. Yep. They all have kids now and I don't. But I think they definitely hit a point too where they lost a lot of interest in like the Nintendo games, the more child friendly games too. Whereas I just never did. I was like, I don't care. I'm not outgrowing this. Probably the most pivotal moment for me was, as I mentioned, I started beating all these games for the Super Nintendo that I couldn't beat as a kid, in my preteens. And Mega Man X was probably one of the first ones, actually, now that I think about it. And one of the ones that I definitely was like the most excited to finally, you know, see those credits roll on. That was probably, if there was a pivotal moment, it was that. It was those last two summers when I was too young to have a job and old enough to have the resources to stick through and actually finish all these old Super Nintendo games.
That's interesting. Yeah, that's interesting that that moment came for you when you were able to actually complete these things. Because I really do think that's a big part of it, right? The satisfaction of finishing a thing. I see that again. It's really cool being a parent because I get to watch my son experience these things for the first time and find out what he's into. He started out loving racing games. Like Mario Kart was he loves Mario Kart and he's gotten pretty good at it. He's gotten really good at platformers. He likes the Mario Wii U Deluxe. Again, well, there's 100 names
on
it.
I think it was definitely a big deal for me being more a retro gamer was just that realization that I was having more fun playing Super Nintendo than PlayStation 2 or GameCube at the time.
Right.
As well, yeah. which really kind of shaped it to a, you know, to this day, I'm kind of a, you know, I'm not all about, you know, the high tech for the sake of it being the high tech stuff. I'm not all about the graphics. Like I just want a solid, you know, gameplay experience that is actually about fun first and foremost.
Yeah. Next up on SideQuest Volume 7, we have Joe of SNES's Life. If you haven't heard of this show, then you probably haven't listened to the Earthbound stuff and the renting episodes. He was a big part of those shows, and his YouTube/Twitch channel is all about a father and son playing every Super Nintendo game ever made. It is an ambitious journey they're going on, but it's a lot of fun watching them share these experiences, put them to video so we can all enjoy them. And I love watching people play games for the first time, even though they may have played them before, but especially if they've never tried it. It's a really fun experience and they're very authentic in how they produce their work. So be sure to check out SNES is Life on both YouTube and Twitch. Here we talk to Joe about his introduction to games and why they mean so much to him. Joe, man, thanks again for joining me to chat a bit about the days of yore. But let me just first get a quick feel for your YouTube channel and the work you've been doing over there at SNES's Life. And yeah, I'd love to hear a bit about the channel itself.
Sure. So I started the channel, I think, in 2017. My oldest son was 16 at the time, and he wanted to do a YouTube channel. I said, all right. You know, I'll pony the money to buy the gear to do the YouTube channel. I said, but we're going to do something I want to do. and so I was like, you know, at the time I was just really getting into listening to a bunch of podcasts about video games. I said, let's talk about video games. I want you to go back and play the games that I grew up with that, you know, you'll probably hate. And he didn't, bless him.
Yeah, and good kid.
We did that for, you know, 3 years, and then he eventually moved away to college, so now it's just kind of me doing it. But the goal was to play every North American-released SNES game in mostly chronological order.
Very nice. Very nice. How far did you get, or are you still kind of going on that path?
Still going.
Yeah, okay.
I just broke, I think, 400
around December some point.
Nice.
So another 300 to go.
I was gonna say you're more than halfway there, but hey, listen, you know what? There's no time frame on this. You can. That's really cool. Of all the games you've played, or actually, let's put it this way, because obviously there's been 400 of them. Have there been any surprises that you've gone to that maybe when you were younger you're like, ah, this game kind of stinks, and now you look at it and you're like, oh wow, this is actually pretty decent.
So I remember as a kid, I liked the idea of JRPGs. My older brother was 6 years older than me. He was a big Final Fantasy guy. And I used to play them, and I could never get anywhere in them. And as an adult, I go back to those, and I just hate them.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
I can't get into them, and the entire game mechanic of being forced to grind just to get to the next area drives me. I don't have the time for that.
It's time. Time is the enemy to us all.
It is.
Brutal. Brutal. No, I totally get that, man. I love RPGs too, but I'm the same way. You know, got two kids and a job and this time crunch called a podcast. And it's hard to find the time to put into a giant chonky, you know, 80 hour RPG where you're just running around in circles and leveling. Sure. It's brutal. So yeah, I totally get that. What other games would you say in your journey so far? Because now around what year are you at now? You're probably around like, I'm guessing like 93?
Mid 94.
You are mid 94. Okay. So yep. You're getting to the big bangers of the SNES library, your Donkey Kong Countries and your Chrono Triggers and all that sort of thing.
Yeah. Next game I'm playing tomorrow night after recording this, obviously this won't be out for who knows how long, is Illusion of Gaia.
Oh, nice. So, well, there you go. Right back into the RPG world.
I don't play games to completion or anything.
Sure. No, that makes sense.
Like, I give them a solid hour of attempt, and that's where I usually cut it. If it's really good, I'll play it a second or third day, but usually it gets an hour of time, and that's it.
Yeah, and for the kind of thing you're doing as, like, this little, like, mini retrospective, I think that's fair. I don't think it's... If you're not doing this professionally, I don't think it's fair to ask somebody, because then the series would never get done. You see, that it would just never complete.
Right.
Yeah, man. Well, that's cool. So yeah, that sounds like quite the journey. And so you keep on keeping on. You also do some Twitch stuff, I think, right?
Yeah, it's actually all Twitch. My YouTube channel is really just a repository for the Twitch streams since they delete them after 48 hours or something.
Something like that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. So I just do that to save it, and I'm happy I have, because it's a life experience that I've gotten to share with both my boys. Have done the show with me. My wife did the show with me. You know, she had cancer in 2020.
Oh wow!
She survived it, but
awesome.
It was important to me at that stage. I'm like, oh, I've got, you know, recent things that me and her had sat down together and done on video.
Yeah, that's so cool. That's very cool. No, I'm glad to hear that she's okay, and that's fantastic. And you're right; it's nice to have sometimes these little audio, video mementos, almost. You know what I mean? Like, it's cool to kind of capture this stuff because, you know, yeah. One of the cool things I've been able to do is get my 6 year old here and talk about Mario Movie, and I'm hoping, you know, in 15, 20 years when he's getting married, I can play this and embarrass him at a wedding reception and just make him blush. That's really the whole point of this show, is to embarrass my family.
That's our job as parents.
That's it. Oh, are you kidding me? You get that when you sign up. You have to roll up to your kids' school when they're in high school playing Slipknot and just embarrass them. Dad, what are you doing? I can't wait. What are you doing? Look, when you have kids, you get to embarrass them. I'm just going to embarrass you. That's part of my payment.
Yeah, it's in the job description. Look it up.
Absolutely. And finally, rounding out episode 92, Side Quest Volume 7 is Dan, aka Captain Gingerbeard, on Twitter. He joined me for a number of episodes all surrounding Earthbound, like most of these people here. And Dan is just a fun person to talk to. He's excited about games, and he was just a fun hang. I think he was somebody I'd like to meet in real life and just hang with. No offense to anybody else on the show. Everyone, I've met a few people on this show already, and everyone's been really kind and awesome. But I don't know, Dan just sounds like a good hang. So please check out some of his stories about video games, his history, And let's finish off the episode with some good memories from Captain Gingerbeard. Dan, thank you so much for joining me today to talk a bit about Earthbound.
Yeah, thanks game for having that sounds. Me.
Yeah, man, absolutely. Before we get started, though, I'd love to hear kind of your history with video games, where you got started playing, those formative moments leading up to Earthbound, and then we'll just kind of jump into that conversation from there.
Oh, man, I started, you know, pretty young. Like, I don't even remember, like, maybe like 3, 4, or 5 around there. I remember my first game was Super Mario Brothers 3, and we're talking like late, well, probably like early, you know, like 89, 90 around there. Yeah, I don't know. Like, my mom was babysitting some kids, and they had it, and they started letting me play it, and I just got hooked on it. You know, had an Atari for a little bit after that. Finally got my Super Nintendo. That's what really kind of sealed the deal for me.
Nice.
Super Nintendo, got that when that, like, right when that came out, you know, for Christmas, and, you know, had Super Mario World. I was like all about Mario, you know, and, yeah, man, just got really hooked on video games early on.
So Mario sounds like it's been a formative game for you. Well, how old were you when you first picked up Mario 3?
Like I said, I don't even remember my, like, exact age. It's just like, you know, it's almost like my entire life I've known about video games, you know. So it's like, it was like one of my earliest memories was just, you know, just playing Super Mario Brothers 3. With some kids, and I do remember it was in the giant world, right? I remember that much.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. It was most, because that was what they featured in The Wizard. I'm not sure if you saw The Wizard or since. Yeah. That was like the big deal. Like, oh, it's like giant Goombas and Koopas. Oh, yeah, man.
Yeah.
That's what's up.
So, yeah.
So, yeah, man. So what do you play right now? Like, what's, you know, what are you playing right now?
So I'm primarily playing the Switch. I've got a huge backlog of Switch games. A lot of it is stuff that I'm getting caught up on. I actually took a long break from gaming, like up until I got my Switch. That, believe it or not, the most recent system I owned was the N64. So I had a very long break of gaming. So now I got the Switch. I'm kind of, you know, getting back into it, catching up. Right now I'm actually playing the Collection of Mana. Which the Secret of Mana was another, you know, game that's very near and dear to me. So it's nice to, you know, play some of the other games in the trilogy and be able to take Secret of Mana with me wherever I go as well. So I'm playing that. I'm playing Smash Bros, Animal Crossing, you know, just this and that.
Very cool. Have you seen the Mario movie?
Yes, dude, that was so awesome. Wait, yeah, we're talking about the 1993 version, right? Because, you know, that's pinnacle entertainment right there.
Absolutely. I mean, the top tier. I mean, you always think Dystopian Nightmare when you think Mario, right?
Exactly.
That's the first thing that comes to mind. I love that.
But yeah, this, you know, the one that just came out, dude, it is brilliant, man. It is packed with so many references and everything, man. I brought my son to watch it. He's 11. So I got him like in like Mario and everything too. So, you know, we saw it together. So it was really sweet.
That's great. That's great when you can share that stuff with kids, right? And that's kind of one of the cool things about, like, you know, growing up and having kids. And if you're listening, you don't have kids, that's fine too. But especially with kids, to experience things with them and through them is, I think, a really cool part of, you know, the parenting experience. So that's cool you were able to take your son and have that kind of experience with him. Yeah, man. I think that does it. I think I am good to go, man. Do you have any other fun stories about, again, just playing games as a kid, or, you know, other kind of tentpole moments of kind of your fandom when you were younger? I like asking these questions kind of open-ended, because you never know. Maybe a comment that you make may inspire another show. You never know, right? So any other kind of fun stories? Maybe fun stories of playing games with friends, maybe with family. Did you play with your family at all? Or
I played with my dad a lot. He's still kind of fond of Donkey Kong Country, man. I played with him. Like when I was subscribed to Nintendo Power, like one day I got this VHS tape in the mail, and it had like jungle leaves. I'm like, what the heck is this?
Yes, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Donkey Kong Country tape, dude. Man, I must have watched that like hundreds of times, dude. Like my dad, and I watched with my dad too, and my dad will still quote like things from that movie.
Oh, I like, love
even
it
to this day, dude. So we pre-ordered it from Toys R Us, and I got this like Donkey Kong shirt with the pre-order, man, which I don't have anymore.
Oh, rad.
But yeah, dude, it was really sweet. So I prayed with him, and we play like the two-player co-op thing, and you know, we'd be like playing on the minecart level and all this stuff, and you know, it's a lot of fun, man.
That's cool. I love that. I think that's so fun that your dad still quotes it.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
And like, so we also had a Super Mario Kart, right? And like, my dad always picked Bowser, and he was doing like, I don't know, he was messing around in the time trials on like a Koopa Beach level, and he got like this crazy high time that I just couldn't even beat back then. So he'll still like brag about it. He's like, yo, man, I got like the high score on Koopa Beach with Bowser, man. Like he'll still bring that up like 20 years later. Like,
oh, it's great. I love that. He's still bringing it up.
He's still bringing it up, man.
Like, Dad, I've gotten past. I have a mortgage. And kid, you're still getting on me about Koopa Beach. Oh, that's so
just
good.
Like the one time he could like beat me in something, you know.
That's a fun moment, man. I love that. I think that's really cool that you're able to make those connections. And what's interesting about that is, and that's kind of one of the things this show really tries to explore is that people talk about seeing, you know, movies with parents and like those kind of and music and. Video games create the exact same type of things. Like, that's an awesome thing that you and your dad share. My brother and I still quote lines from a random PS2 game called The Getaway, where we still quote lines from this random game. And we have, and we will until we croak, right? And I think that's really cool that you have that connection with your dad and was able to do that through a game. Was there anything else you guys played together?
Let's see. I mean, you know, once we got the N64, we moved from, you know, Super Mario Kart to Mario Kart 64. So, you know, there was that. And, you know, Super Mario World, again, we do like a two-player thing. And anything that had like multiplayer back then, you know, we'd check out. So, and now, you know, like you said, making the connection with my dad, it's like now I'm, you know, I can play games with my son and kind of, you know, make those connections, those memories for him as well.
Absolutely. And that's, I think, when things come full circle. And I think what's interesting about this era of games for people our age is that for the first time, the cycle is coming full circle.
Yeah.
Where when we were kids, yeah, you know, my dad and my mom and dad never played games with me. They didn't get it. My dad understood it, but he never played. He used to watch me play a lot. But he never really played himself, and my mom didn't get it. But as people who we've grown up with the medium, we're now coming full circle where we can play with our kids. We get this. We still enjoy this thing that they're really into. And it's neat to see this kind of come full circle. It's like a generational cycle that's happening right now, which I think for people our age, I think it's very, very cool that we get to share this stuff we love. And the old games, my son, he's turning 7 in a few weeks as of this recording, and he beat Donkey Kong Country.
Nice.
Now, copious amounts of save states and copious amounts of rewind. He's 7 and 6. He was 6 when he did it. Now, look, play as you want, but still, he got through it. He did it himself.
Man, I'm 38, and I use save states too. So.
Listen, that game's tough. So the one thing, just quick aside, his thing is, every time I ask him, like, oh, so what's the next game he's playing? He wants to play like Minecraft and stuff, which is fine. But like, what's the next game you want to play? And he always says Mario and the Lost Levels because I give him like free reign on the NSO. Everything on there is fine. Like, there's nothing on there that's questionable. I don't really have to worry about him stumbling across anything.
Sure.
Yeah, like the fighting games I'm not in love with. But, you know, anything really. And one day I see him playing Lost Levels. I'm like, Will, do you realize that grown adults have a brutal hard time finishing this game, but he doesn't care. He's just like, I don't care. I'm going to beat this.
Yeah.
Like, good luck, dude. But he likes platformers and racing games. Sure. That's his thing. Sure. And yeah, man. So it's cool watching our kids do that. It's really fun.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, my son's gotten into like speedrunning, and he watches a lot of videos like speedrunning games, and he's you know, he's telling me like I got this time on Super Mario Brothers, you know, like the original game. He's trying to get a good time on that, and he's telling me the times he got on like Super Mario Odyssey and stuff. And you know, he actually played Odyssey before I did, so now he's like teaching me like what to do.
Nice. Excellent. Well, you know what, hopefully you can get a good record on him in some game and lord it over him in 30 years when he's has a kid. Like, you've still never beaten me in XYZ games, so
Bowser and Koopa
pick up
Beach,
the sticks,
baby.
Kid. And that just about does it for this edition of A Gamer Looks at 40. If you enjoy this episode, there are 91 other numbered episodes right here on this feed for you to enjoy for a variety of games and topics going all the way back to a couple of years ago. So please check those out if you haven't already. I hang my hat social media wise on Twitter at @agamerlooksat4040. I'm also on TikTok and Instagram and Facebook and all the other things that are out there. Look me up sometime. Love to have you join the community and join in on the conversation. And until next time, please be sure to be kind to yourself and each other.